Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And this week, first off, let's mention Ben is off. His rocker. No. He's on his way to see family for Thanksgiving. But in his place, we have a very special guest this week. Did you guys know that there are lots of comics from the 40s and 50s where the companies went under and no one ever picked up the properties, and they are now public domain? This idea really intrigued me when this guest asked to come on the show, and I looked into it, and there's a whole interesting world behind this that we'll get into a little bit. But our guest this week is the founder of Firestorm Comics, and they currently have a Kickstarter where they've brought back one of these characters known as Catman. And our guest is Brad Linder. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. Actually very happy right now. We just got the new Kickstarter relaunch up and running.
Cool.
So we're doing pretty good.
Cool. So, actually, before we get into it, every week we do a Geek of the Week on the show. We ask a trivia question. The audience tries to answer it. We pick a winner out of the people who submit the correct answer, and then we ask a new question. So last week's question, I'm going to see if you know this, Brad. What was the first feature film, feature length film, to star Batman, and who was the villain?
Oh, man, I know this is on the tip of my tongue. It was one of the black and white serials. I know this, and I actually have it on DVD somewhere. I'm going to have to pass, man. It's skipping my brain.
Well, that was the – okay, so there you go. A lot of people thought of the serials, and that was the trick because the serials – you know, were serials. They were short films that were shown at the beginning and end of movies back in the 40s.
Right.
But there was actually a feature-length film that was made in 1964, which would have been before the 1966 Batman. And it was Dracula was the villain, and it was made by all people, Andy Warhol.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yes. I thought that was extremely fascinating when I found that out as well. And so for those listening, you can go to YouTube and search Andy Warhol Batman movie and find clips. It's not very watchable. It's a very artsy film, as you would expect from Andy Warhol. But we did get somebody who had the correct answer. And that is our follower on Twitter, Bubba Wheat. So he is at Bubba Wheat on Twitter. And actually he runs a really cool website called Flight Tights and Movie Nights, which is all about, he does reviews on, retro movies and, superhero movies, sci-fi movies, comic books. He puts a new one up every week. It's a really cool site. You guys should check it out. And of all the people that would get that, he's obviously the one that would know that answer. So that was,
yeah, that's a little eccentric. That's pretty neat, man.
Yeah. So this week's question, if you know the answer, don't yell it out. Brad, it's for the audience. You can, if you know it, you can tell me afterwards.
Nay.
All right. So as we all know, the character Spider-Man, at one point in his career, he had the symbiote costume, which was of the black costume, which he got in the Secret Wars miniseries. Secret Wars number 8, which came out in December of 82, I believe. The question is, when did the black costume first appear in the regular run Amazing Spider-Man comic book? Which issue and when did that comic come out? So that's the question.
Oh, that's easy. Oh, no, I don't know it.
I will say this. It's a little bit of a trick question, and I'll leave it at that. So
that's how we're getting these questions these days. We Google obscure comic book trivia, and then we immediately go to like the 5,000th page.
Oh, man. Don't tell them how you're doing it. There are people that are so – oh, man. Everybody's going to be burning up Google now trying to figure it out for the next week.
Exactly. So, all so, part of our plan.
So speaking of absurd comic book trivia, tell us a little bit about Catman and this project.
Well, Catman is based in the Firestorm Comics universe, which is a unique timeline and continuity within itself. All of the creators that I work with are brand new indie creators. We've gotten different merits and earned our way through the system, literally with all different projects and stuff over the last few years. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, is we came up to a point where we met a threshold in comics, which everybody's been complaining about the last 5 or 10 years. It was 2007 or so when I really got irked by comics and just stopped buying anything except specific issues once in a while when I heard about something coming up. Mm-hmm. I started investigating original characters and pulled my original properties. You know, I pulled a Todd McFarlane and pulled out all my original properties and started making comic books and built this original universe, and then decided to use public domain characters to get that nostalgic pre-example history already slapped into these books. And we built an original universe around it. I got with independent creators and started in 2012 developing properties from concepts and stories and scripts and plots that I had written up into full developed projects and got them underway. And right now we first came out with Catman. This character is Darren Merriweather, which is, in our universe, the grandson of the 1940s and 50s original Catman from Holyoke. Mm-hmm. We did not revamp the property into modern day as the original character. We didn't want to do that. All of our adaptations are brand new, revamped due to our origin story that's about to come out as well, which was messed up, basically, to put it short. So we had a time cop and a mercenary involved in nuclear weapons, and the original timeline got blown up. So we'll leave it at that for right now until the book comes out.
That's one way to retcon things.
Yeah. We wanted an original continuity timeline, and we had the spirit of retribution from the 40s as well play into it. And he saved the planet and said everybody's innocent and reset the globe, and this is what we've got. So all these new timelines and characters, starting with Catman, is going to come into the FSU. So Darren is dealing with the legacy of his grandfather as the hero and dealing with a genetic gene, a gene crossing that they have called the cat gene. And it is a primal feral instinct that they have that gives them their strength and power. So he ends up having to deal with whether he's going to be the anti-hero or if he's going to be more traditional and try to hold on to his humanity. And this guy is going to be volatile. We don't know where he's going yet exactly, if he's going to cross the line and kill people or if he's just going to just severely tear them up. He's going to have to base that fact on the situation at the time. The original Kitty from the 1940s and 50s Catman series actually grew up. She's a teenager in the comic books originally in the 40s. And what we did was we had her grow up and them being isolated together end up getting married. And they start the Merriweather Foundation, which is his family's fortune. And they have a daughter, which the cat gene going with it. He's going to have to face whether, you know, he's going to face it as the feral hero or if he's going to face it as the man. And right. We push it from that perspective. We've gone very simple and urban with the storyline, but I'm not explaining that very well right now, but but I promise you it is very simple and very direct. It's got a nostalgic feel of a Batman or a typical street anti-hero type of character. And we're having a blast with it, man. We're working on issue 3 right now in production. So, and we've got it scripted out through 6. So we're doing really, really well with it.
Cool. Yeah. I was going to ask you about Kitty because when I looked it up, or Kitten, mm-hmm. when I looked up the Catman, yeah, to familiarize myself with the original character, I noticed that, yes, he had a partner, a female partner named Kitten. Mm-hmm. Right.
And the reason we call her Kitty in there is because in the 1940s, she was originally named Kitty up until Holyoke took her over in the 51 and made her Kitten.
Okay.
So that's the reason we call her that. But yeah, just to be specific for the fans that know the Catman character from the past, from Holyoke, yeah, it is Kitten.
Yes. I mean, it's an interesting concept. As I said in the intro, is I didn't realize there were so many characters that had fallen into public domain from the 40s.
Right.
You know, just from companies that had gone under and no one had picked up the rights to it or you know, bought the failing companies or anything. So they're kind of just out there.
Well, there's a big misconception with public domain, because everybody thinks that they have to do, because the guidelines for public domain are simple. They say, okay, you can make an adaptation off of this and you can use it in its original form that falls into public domain, because a lot of the books were renewed later on or mm-hmm. picked up by other companies. And it is, I have to face this with the Catman Evolution name all the time. You know, you can't call that guy Catman because, you know, DC's got a villain named Catman. Well, guess what? Yes, we can call him Catman inside the book. The thing is we have to have a different title banner as Catman trademarked.
Right.
You know, you got to extend it into a different phrase or a different meaning. Well, that's the thing. We changed it to Catman Evolution because this is the upgrade for this character. And that was the whole thing. We wanted to bring it to modern age. As far as public domain characters go, there's a catch 22 where people think that they have to use only that version. And as you know, the 1940s and 50s was very innocent and very blunt in the way they set stuff up. And it wouldn't work in modern times. Well, that's the reason we created the FSU, so that we could have a brand new revamped timeline. We've got everybody in here. We've got 67 titles in the production at this point.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
That's
they're going to be released over the next 5 years.
I was gonna say, that's a pretty
ambitious.
Ambitious, that's the word. Thank you. Project there.
We've got a long-term plan on it. We've got a 20-year plan in place, and we're putting it together and very slowly and very steadily. And we've got these 60 titles coming out, these 60 plus titles coming out over the next 3 to 5 years, depending on the production level and our income and finances as the company takes off. So I mean, we're taking it very slow and steady. And we're bringing them into where we can develop them as the company and as the industry fan base grows for what we're doing, because we're going mainstream, man. We are an independent company with independent creativity and freedom, and we're going to be right up there with mainstream quality.
Right. Well, you know, and for those people who argue about, you know, you can't have Catman because DC has a Catman. Marvel has a Catman too, by the way. Also, just say, well, what about Captain Marvel?
Well, I actually have a title coming out that's our third series. I actually have a title called Only the Strong, and we are using Captain Marvel in that book.
Oh, which version of Captain Marvel?
We are going to use the public domain version of Captain Marvel, but I'm going to leave it at that.
So the public domain, yeah, I actually know somebody who was working on a book a couple years ago, I don't know how far he got with it, where essentially he was compiling a list of every character that was ever named Captain Marvel, because people have a misconception. They only think of either, you know, the DC Shazam Captain Marvel, or I think it's Captain Marvel now in the Marvel universe.
Right,
there have been over, I think, 50 characters named Captain Marvel over the years.
Well, we're bringing this one out with a brand new original FSU origin, so it's going to be cool. I mean, he will have the similarities to bring up the character and say, okay, yeah, this is a Captain Marvel I can relate to, but it's not what you're going to expect in the Captain Marvel line. And it's definitely going to make people shake their head and go, I don't know if I can handle that or not. You know, we're having a lot of fun with a lot of these revamps. But we've got a lot of original characters too that aren't public domain based, you know, that I've created over the years. And we are definitely putting those in there as well.
Cool. Actually, I have to say this whole endeavor excites me, because, you know, you're taking, number one, you're taking characters people had forgotten about and breathing new life into them. Whether some people agree with that or not, that's a whole other story. I think it's a really cool idea. You know, they're sitting out there for someone to bring them back. And on the other hand, you're being creative and you're, you know, like you said, you have your own characters, your own world that you're building. And isn't that what this is all about? You know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hands down. The biggest thing with comics, you got to think about comics like, the division between independent and mainstream marketing for comic books is the worst and most hindering on itself that any other industry in the world has, because they choke themselves out based on monetary gain rather than creativity. Because if you think about it, you guys have talked about it on the show before, you know, 99% of the tabloids and magazines are owned by one or two companies, and they co-opt together to make sure that each individual entity maintains a niche in that market to keep itself strong. And they compete against themselves with their own properties and hire all these freelance writers and creative people to get in there and expose the market to the news that they want to promote and build themselves a market to where everybody's buying 20 different magazines thinking they're competitors with each other, but they're the same property in reality by the same owner company. And then when you turn around to like newspapers, same thing. So comic books due to distribution centers that we won't name because we don't want to flag anybody. we all know who that is. Due to their submission process being open to avoid monopoly due to their extensive exclusivity contracts and their submission process being set up to block and fail indie Marvel and DC have set themselves up on such a high pedestal that they've branded the last 40 to 70 years to be best of the best. So you've got all these creators coming up for the last 30, 40, 50 years saying, we've got to get that job. And the best way to do that is be cutthroat competitive. And you can't do that in a market like this and make industry growth. Okay. Now that comes full circle, because what ends up happening is you have guys competing for jobs on the same 80 to 120 titles from these two big companies. And you've got thousands of creators out of work that can't get to it because these other guys have screwed them to get to the job.
Right.
Okay. Now you got guys like me. Oh, go ahead.
No, I think I've heard, Dave's introduced me to a lot of artists lately. And I think I've heard a lot of them talking about that kind of thing where, you know, most of the artists, I mean, there are lots of incredibly good artists out there, and yet there's so little money flowing to them because it's only the cream of the crop or whatever, the lucky ones that get to work on the main titles. They get to make real paychecks, and the rest of them are stuck trying to sell their art at comic shows, even though some of their stuff is better than what you'd see on some of the book on the covers
exactly.
of the books.
Exactly. And that's the big problem, because we've gotten so competitive that nobody builds on the community and thinking about this from a different perspective. That's the reason I love Kickstarter so much. And that's the reason I did this project, because I'm a fan of comics first and foremost. Okay. I wanted to do comics that I wanted to read. I don't care about the rest of it. I wanted to do comics that I wanted to read. And if I'm fortunate enough to make money off of it, outstanding. It's a bonus. But the thing is, I wanted to bring in new comics, new talent, new approach, and step up and say, okay, an independent company can hit the market as a mainstream competitor and sit right next to those big titles and make money. And the thing is, this is what people have to get through. They have to stop competing and start communicating in the community level. You have to start sharing. You have to start pledging and promoting bigger projects to get out there on the market and stop buying comic books, because the biggest number one Kickstarter problem is all these small guys that are competing for their little niche. They're trying to make direct sales on this thing, and they sell comic books on there for $8 a pop, and they're getting the $5 for the book on print on demand, making a dollar off of it, and then using the rest of the money for fees and shipping. And they're screwing themselves. They're screwing the industry, because what they don't understand is when you go in and put up a $15 post like I did, you have to come in and go, okay, here's the deal. You either have to get bigger printings so that you can get a smaller rate on that printing discount, or you have to do a higher number to get more benefit out of it. Because I had the number one complaint of $15. I'm not paying $15 for a comic book. Nobody will buy $15 for a comic book. You're not buying a $15 comic book by pledging. You're buying $5 of that for your reward, because $4 of it goes to Kickstarter and Amazon. And then you've got the other $6 that actually goes to my printing project. So, you know, you got to look at what you're buying and pledging for to build the community.
Well, yeah. A $15 comic book is called a graphic novel, but
you know, exactly.
At least it better be.
Yeah, exactly. But you understand what I'm saying with the $15 pledge, right?
Oh, yeah.
We've got to get in there and support these people, because what's happening is we've got to take a more, from the creator side, we've got to bring in a more creative approach and a more professional approach and build up an industry, build up a comic book series, and build up comics properties that we can grow into a company on the mainstream market. And that's what this whole Kickstarter thing is about, to help communities build up that money together and fund what they want to see on the market and support it. And as a comic creator, that brings us back full circle to your question. I mean, I know I went the long way about it, and I apologize for that. But the whole thing was, we wanted to bring it to Kickstarter for the creativity of it, so that we can say everybody needs to step in as a community member and pledge for these comic book projects and kick them out there and say, we're not going to stand for this crap anymore, and we're going to get books on the market that we want to see of independent talent, so that we can fund to hire more independents and more creators.
Right. It's funny. I agree with everything that you were saying. And it's funny because you hear now that people go, oh, it's a golden age for comic book fans because of all the movies that are being made. But it's a golden age for Marvel and DC is what it really comes down to.
For Marvel anyway.
Yeah. We'll pass over that one.
But they're the two big boys on the block. They have all the mainstream characters. They're making all the money.
And they've got huge studios behind them with large barrels of cash.
And but aside from that, as you said, they're also put themselves in a position where they're all their characters now are these huge properties. And it's
right.
They're just money-making machines at this point. They're not worried about being super creative with them, you know. They go as far as, okay, we have to somewhat reinvent Superman for the modern age because no one wants the big blue Boy Scout anymore, and those kinds of things. But that's not really being creative where...
Yeah, please don't get me started on the 52, man. Please. I think that whole revamp was just a disaster. I think DC is lost right now because of the Disney finding their niche with the kids' versions of the comic books. And they have the kiddie comics, and then they have the mainstream versions. And, you know, this multiverse thing is a disaster because they're trying to reform everything. And I'm so glad they're going into Secret War to fix it all. But the new 52... Oh my God! Yeah, I'll just avoid that one.
Seriously, we've only got an hour, and you and I could probably just go to town on that one for.
Oh yeah, too long. I could smoke them.
But along the lines,
I love all those characters.
Along the lines of the new 52, though, again, it was launched with Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo working on Batman, and. Though they did an amazing job with the Court of Owls storyline, that when they launched, the sales were really good on that book. So they have kept those guys on as long as they could. So now what are we going into 2 years where they're the main two guys working on that book? What about all the other artists and writers out there that want some time with Batman? You know, they haven't proven themselves as selling the books, so they keep just giving it to their star team.
Okay, well here's the thing, and we won't go into it because I don't want to burn up the whole time talking about it, but here's the thing. Warner Brothers is lost right now, and they are so tight-knit with their executive board running everything right now, they have a big problem with letting go and letting creators that know what they're doing handle the comic book divisions. And if they split them off and let the comic books run the way they need to instead of corporate decisions by the financial charts, they will actually make money like they did in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And DC was just cream of the crop. You know this back then. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they were the front runner way over Marvel and Timely. And then Timely came up because in the 60s they found a boom with Stan Lee's original sci-fi runs in the superhero genre. And they left from there. But Marvel is kicking their butt because of the fact that Marvel has decided – Disney's left them alone and said Disney knows what they're doing, Marvel knows what they're doing, and they leave them alone and let them do their runs in the films and the comic books. And that's the reason they're doing that. They're redefining the properties for the modern age, and that's the whole point of the Marvel Now setup. And I took – huge note of that because I saw that transition. Spider-Man got really, really cartoony for a little bit, you know, and it got really strangely cartoony for a little bit. And that's because they were redefining the character to see where the medium needed to stop. Then they found the niche and they got it in there with Spider-Man, you know, Spider Island and all that. And they choked it back and it went fine. But DC, however, is a kid lost in the park right now. That is exactly what's going on there. They don't have any defining position. You have Nolan in the films doing great stuff with Batman. You know, whether you like Christian Bale's gruffy voice or not, those movies were great, plain and simple. You know, the stuff with Superman and Batman coming out with the Man of Steel line, I really enjoyed it. A lot of people didn't. I liked it. I liked the New Edge version of it. It brought it up to speed as far as I'm concerned with the new generation, and a lot of kids are feeding back off of it. But the new 52 line is choking out due to the fact that it is lost right now. There were great stories starting that storyline out. They saw something work, and like you were talking about the Batman run, it was perfect for the start of this thing. What they should have done is develop the mainstream Justice League properties one at a time, but what they did was is they choked it out and said, okay, we're going to throw – everybody likes these new revamped characters. We're going to throw the whole thing out there at once and see what sticks. Well, yeah. Guess what oozed down the wall? You know?
Yeah.
Batman got slimed is what happened. Batman stuck to the wall first, and then everything else hit him on top, so it ran down. He got slimed. So that's where they're at right now.
Yeah.
So I have a rather ignorant question. I know there's a lot of other houses out there now that are trying to move into the comic space. I think there's Valiant, there's Xenoscope. How is your property going to? Are you like a competitor with them now, or you're going to be? Or?
I'm not a competitor with them. I am in a totally different range altogether, man. I do not look at comic books. I see the current comic industry on a barrier, and then I see what I'm doing because I'm going for the digital age as much as the print age. And we're coming out in Amazon. We're coming out in Kindle here in the next week or so. We've got editions coming out in Kindle. They're already set for approval right now. I'm just waiting for the feedback on them. I've been working with Amazon and Kindle for years and other projects, so I know exactly how they work. We're going to be on drive-through. We're going to be on Comixology. We're waiting for approval for both of those right now. There's three or four other digital outlets that are coming through as well. So we are covering the market. As far as where we're going with the shelves, we are doing a comic book distribution system by the title of Comic Kickstarter, which focuses and promotes on other Kickstarter comics that we want to see hit the market as mainstream quality for the independent market and say, these guys can make these books go. You really need to check them out. And we promote the best of the best from those selections. We have a comic Kickstarter group on Facebook that we're doing. We're also coming up with a site by the name of accessgnome.com, which my daughter actually came up with when she was two. It was a gnome character that I made for her to tell little stories for her bedtime. And she calls him Uncle Louie. And he's actually our icon for accessgnome.com. We are going to do a digital distribution service that goes up to the top of the internet and gets up at the top of Google for the search terms, comic books, and all that fun stuff. And we're going to be competing for those slots to bring fans the base of whatever comics they should see because they wouldn't otherwise. That's our goal. And we're going to help just as many other comic publishers out there get their stuff up there as we are with the Firestorm Comics. We are going to be a whole new ball game, and we've got a whole new racket. We don't even remotely compete with Marvel or DC. If they are on the same page as we are when we come out there and you see us on the distribution page and they happen to be in the same three or four first links, God bless them because they were going to work hard to keep it.
Cool. Oh,
very cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's you're right. It's wow. You know, your whole idea is reminding me of what comic book conventions felt like before the movies became mainstream. You know, it's a community, and it should be a community. You know, it shouldn't be DC and Marvel fighting for top spot. It should be guys in a room saying, "Hey, did you check out this really cool comic from Zenoscope? Oh, did you see this from Firestorm?" You know, and trading comics. That's how this all started. This is how the business grew, you know.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember, before 1962, when Timely made the transition to Marvel in 1961, it started promoting sci-fi comic books, which started with Fantastic Four and everybody else that we all know and love. And no, don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking any of those properties, and I'm not knocking those companies. I'm a fan too. We're a lost fan right now because we don't know what the, you know, never mind that word, they're doing.
Right.
But yeah, we all know that they're in a boat floating without an oar right now. As soon as they figure out, you know, that the motor's still attached and all they have to do is pull the cord, we'll be fine.
Right.
But with the way this is going right now, we're trying to push a direction, because before Marvel made the transition into Marvel from Timely, there were over 60 American U.S.-based comic book publishers from 1941 to 1961.
Wow.
You got to remember, all these public domain characters that fell off the planet, 99% of them were done in anthologies and in what they called bulk serials. Okay.
Right.
They weren't called anthologies back then. They were called bulk serials, because what they were is they were competing against books like Reader's Digest that had multiple stories. You had the sci-fi pulp magazines, which were out there, the crime pulp magazines, which were out there in just stories. These guys took the best of those pulp approaches and put them into comic books and put four or five different comic books in there. Jack Kirby and Joe Simon, we're working, Joe Simonson, we're working on, I believe, crime stories back in the 1930s in the same manner. They've published a big old graphic novel collection that you can get at the library of Jack's work from his crime stuff, and it's just phenomenal. Through the 1930s on down to the 1960s when it all started, there, like I said, man, there were comic book companies in Australia. There were comic book companies in Europe. There were comic book companies in Canada. There were companies in Mexico. There were companies in especially Germany and Italy. They loved comic books way more than Japan did. The only thing was is Japan developed their own style, as we all know, which became manga and anime and other different things in different genres. Well, that's why they got stylized. That's what made them so popular. And they made a big jump in the 70s into American animation with G-Force and things like that.
Right.
But what you're getting at with these comic books, we've got to build that industry back up. That was, get this, back in 1952, this was a multi-million dollar industry. The records that I could track down from statistics of the National Financial Department and the tax companies in the tax departments in the U.S., I actually found out that in America, that was a multi-million dollar property zone. And they came out with what I believe was $50 million in a five-year period, which back in the 50s, man, that was like billions of dollars today.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and everybody choked it out to make themselves cream of the crop. And when Marvel got so big, everybody stopped buying the serials because the serials couldn't keep up because all the new talent wanted to go where the money was, which was Marvel.
Right.
And DC. So, you know, and they've spent so much time in propaganda over the years of commercializing themselves as being the top dogs, they've choked the industry out and done more damage to it than they actually done good. And they don't realize it, but now they're so big, they don't care.
No, I mean, that's true. You know, you can definitely liken it to, the computer industry and look at, Apple and Microsoft, you know,
yeah, Silicon Valley. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, yeah. If anyone is never seen the movie, it's actually a documentary called Pirates of Silicon Valley. Not Pirates of Silicon Valley. That was the one with the actors in it. There's another Silicon Valley one. I'll have to find it, put in the description of this episode. It's a documentary. The Pirates of Silicon Valley is the same thing. They were trying to tell the same story. These guys wanted to change the world, change how business worked, make everything available for everyone, change how things were we're going and blah, blah, and they become top dogs and it's back to business as usual, you know, squash right. the competitors, stay on top. You know, so I mean, that's what happened here in the comic book industry in the 40s and 50s. And, it's a shame, you know, cause, yeah. you know, it's, especially the world we live in today, there's enough people out there with an interest right now where, you know, these properties could be alive. And, you know, thanks to you, we have a chance for that. So tell me a little bit more then about why you chose Catman as one of your first characters to launch with.
Well, it comes back again to the point of wanting something that I was a fan of. I needed a character that would everybody can relate to, and all that's what I wanted with all these comic books, is that I wanted properties that would come out and be developed as something everybody could read that's fresh, original, and our own approach, but still has that back history and nostalgia and mm-hmm. instant connection in the way we produced it, because A, it has that past public domain connection with people that do know the character and can go check it out and say, wow, how is this going to relate? And it gives them that natural intrigue to check it out, for one.
Right.
For the next level of it is we went with a very modern writing style. I layer stories very, very deeply, and all right. my writers work closely with me to do that. There's mm-hmm. 10 different things going on in this book, and I guarantee you, you'll be reading issue 1 today, and issue 12, you'll go, oh, I remember that. That was that guy. He got coffee spilled on him. Now he's a villain. Oh my God. You know, that kind of thing. And that we layer stuff in now mm-hmm. interwoven to where it grabs you. We also wanted to get the perspective of a character that people could instantly relate to from ground zero, but yet feel the elegance and legacy of
okay.
with the backstory.
Right.
We wanted it to where you would connect with it instantly by seeing these pages and going, wow, this reminds me of, and that's what we wanted, that instant historical connection to where you could look back and say, I love that comic book, and this reminds me of this time in my life when I enjoyed this book as well. It's instant connection, man. It's about bonding with
right,
the book.
Right, right. I was kind of hoping you were going to say you were a fan of Fairly Odd Parents. you mentioned,
you know, I actually am due to my young daughter. She's 9, and mm-hmm. She grew up with it. And actually, I am, and I loved Adam West playing Catman on that show.
Yes. So there you go. There's something else you people can complain about. He can do it if a Fairly Odd Parents can have a Catman. Firestorm can.
There you go. I've actually used that analogy a couple of times because a couple of people get a little hard-headed about it. They're like, well, you can't do it. Well, yes, I can. Trust me. My attorneys say it's okay.
So is he going to have the same powers as the original Catman?
He is more of a modern feral character. Okay. We are going to be progressing his character, because of the cat gene that we bring in. We are going to be putting it, out there as, yes, he has the same line of powers, but he is way more, animalistic and primal.
Right.
So we're going with a modern edge version of it. I mean, we've definitely, gotten rid of the classic, you know, we're going to wear claws because we can't cat, you know, wolf out with the cat thing, but he actually does that a little bit. He has fangs and he does extend claws and all that mess. Just like anybody would expect. And I say mess because of the fact that I personally think that would suck, but you know, if it happened to me, I'd be like, uh-oh, you know, but, this guy is handling it with grace because he's got his grandmother in place, you know, as a mentor to actually help him. I will leak a little fun tidbit. We are going to have our own version of Kitten involved in the storyline down the line. Mm-hmm. She's going to come up in the next issue or two. That's going to be a nice fun play. We are going to be pushing the character beyond the bounds of what he ever could have been as his grandfather. And we're not going to say whether his grandfather's going to make an appearance or not, you know, as an Obi-Wan type spirit, or if he's actually going to appear physically. You know, that kind of thing. We're going to leave that wide open for fans to have to check out the book to get that.
All right. And just for those who are wondering, the original Catman's powers were super strength, enhanced mm-hmm. agility, natural night vision, and mm-hmm. the legendary 9 lives of a cat.
Right.
that one seems a little strange to try to pull off in today's world as well.
Yeah, he doesn't have 9 lives. He's just got 1, but he is tough to take it from him. Yeah, it is definitely going to be a tough nut to crack as far as that goes. Yeah.
All right. So why don't you also tell us a little about who's the creative team behind the site? You're the co-writer, correct?
Right. Well, I'm the co-plotter. Yeah.
Co-plotter. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we go specifically like that because I don't actually write the script.
Okay.
just giving Ronnie her kudos, man, because she wrote the script. I did approve it, and I did tweak on it a little bit here and there, you know, as far as approval goes, as the editorial standards. But yeah, she is the scripting artist and or the scripting writer at this point and making all those moves. Right now we've got, of course, myself. Then we've got Veronica Massey. We call her Ronnie. She is the paranormal romance novelist that we mentioned, and she is just killing it, man. Definitely. We've got Ron Islis, which disappeared on us. We call him Ron the Vanishing, Rod the Vanishing, actually. I called him Ron Running because I had a problem pronouncing his last name. And I just didn't want to call him Rod all the time. It bothered me. But we've got Luis Alonso, which we call Inkstick. The guy is the fastest inker I've ever met to hold a professional quality. It is just nuts. Everything he did on the pages, he would get 3 or 4 pages turned in a couple of days, where most people took a week. He would kick out 3 to 5 pages in 24 hours and just turn them right back around to me. Yeah. And I mean, you see the book, you see the pages, you guys know what quality we're talking about here. Blue Zhao, she is a young lady from China, works in graphic arts and works in a comic book studio over there. And she freelances with me. And, she replaced a colorist that we lost, due to Rod's vanishing. And, he decided to go a little bizarre on us and get a little emotional about it and decided to destroy pages and not turn them in. So we, moved on to, Blue, which turned out to finish the book in a week, which was also kind of creepy, but in a good way. Then we have, Tom, which we called, T. Perrin Mitchell, which, we call that guy Blam Blam because he is our letterer and he's lettered multiple titles for me in a pinch. Mm-hmm. Letterers are the hardest, even after Rod's disappearance, letterers are the guys that actually flake out on me the most. And it's shocking. There are so many good letterers out there. And I was like, I got to find all these pickles. Come on, man. You know, you gotta give me one good one out of the jar. And then this guy's taken over 5 titles for us. So he's phenomenal. And, Melvin Constantinio. I have a problem with his name, but Melvin came in as the cover artist. He's the one that did all of the pinups that you guys see on here, and he did the cover work. He did the blue Catman image that's on the Kickstarter page right now, and did both alternate covers. He took over after I did for issue 2, and right now he's penciling issue 2 and issue 3, and he's tearing it up, man. He's got that title as well as another one coming out for us right now. That pretty much wraps it up, man. I mean, that's the bottom line for it. Those guys came together as a tight-knit team and kicked this book out and went from falling off of halfway through issue 1 with all these stops and stalls and then turned it around, and they got us into issue 3 without missing a beat for about 3 weeks.
Right. So now that we've come to it, what is the story with your artist vanishing, as you say? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, yeah. You had said at the beginning there was a story about behind that.
Oh, yeah, that was Rod. That was Rod disappearing on us. Mm-hmm. Sorry for the lull. I was just waiting for you guys to respond.
Oh, no, we're listening in rapt attention here.
Okay. The story behind the big deal was Rod vanished on us on page 18, and it shocked the entire team because we were like, you know, we're 5 pages away, guy. Where'd you go? You know, and when we got on there, we had a problem and stalled out for about a week looking for a new artist to come on because I was working on other projects. So I decided to keep the book running. Our colorist freaked out on us and our letterer freaked out on us, and they both split and started hammering us a little bit. And I won't mention their names because they are professionals and I don't want to do that.
Right.
But anyway, they freaked out on us. Lewis actually got way so far ahead on the two books that he was working on. He ended up actually coming back to us and saying, "Hey man, if you need me to pencil it, lay it out and I'll ink over it and detail it out myself." So I finally took the reins on it and got it all set up, got the last four or five pages kicked out, and we got everything on. And then I found Melvin and we worked with him to get the cover done. Well, the work that we had put up on Dropbox actually vanished for some reason as we finished issue one. And I almost lost the entire team because of it. And Lewis told me, he said, "I've got another job." And he said, "I tell you what," he said, "I'm about to have a heart attack here." He said, "We've got to do something." So, you know, that was pretty much it. After Rod disappeared on us, it was a house of dominoes, man. I mean, just somebody come up and he just flicked it over and we were dead in the water.
Wow.
But we recovered after nearly 2 weeks of gap. And Melvin started working on pages for issue two when I was still finishing up one for those five pages, because I had to finish a book I was currently working on. And I had everybody chawing at the bit. Are we going to make one? Or are we going to make one?
Right.
Then, by mistake, when we emailed colored samples back to each other, Blue and I actually submitted a couple of things into the wrong folder, and it went public for about 3 days and we didn't know it. About half the first book was out there on the public domain, in the public forum for Dropbox in our public files. And we were like, "Oh God, what do we do?" And luckily, by pure chance, no one found them.
Well, that's good. So just so the audience is clear, when you say vanish, he didn't send you an email and say, "Another project's come up, I'm leaving the team." He just stopped communicating with you and disappeared.
He sent me a Dear John email that said, "Brad, I can't finish the book, and sorry," and then vanished literally. His Facebook was gone. His DeviantArt account was gone. All of his emails were closed. The guy went into protective custody and vanished.
Interesting.
Wow.
We have no idea what happened to him. We were kind of worried about him at first, but you know, so much of the team was upset that he left them hanging after being so close to finishing. Lewis said at one point that he was lucky he left because he would probably killed him himself. So it was a hostile situation for a little bit.
And then he resurfaced under the name Greg Capula and started working for DC. I don't know.
Right.
Wow, I've heard a lot of stories about interesting things happening with independents working on a book. It's the first time I've ever heard someone just disappeared on them.
Yeah. You know, as far as Rod goes, though, man, he just went left field on us and turned in two pages prior. I edited them, contacted him back. I said, you know, "They're great. Let's run with them." Mm-hmm. And that the very next morning I got that email, and I've still got it on my desktop. It still cracks me up every time I read it, because I was like, "You've got to be kidding me. This has to be a joke." And right. I tried to email him for about 2 days later trying to get him back, because I was like, "Man, you got to quit. This is scary." You know,
right?
You got to cut it out. We got to get back to work. And he never responded. And then all of a sudden Gmail said he was gone for his Gmail account, and you know, all of his accounts were dead. And I was just like, "Holy crap, the guy's been killed or something," you know, because, I mean, unfortunately, he lives down in Mexico. I mean, you know, anything could have happened.
Yeah.
And I love the Mexico. Don't get me wrong. You guys have a great place down there. But come on. It's not quite as safe as up here. We know it.
Well, hopefully he's listening to this and he knows that he's missed and loved. And maybe he can reach out to you someday.
You know, I'd like to find out what happened to him, but I wouldn't recommend him touching base with the rest of the team. just for his own personal safety, I wouldn't recommend that.
Yeah. So we've got Catman with your Kickstarter going on right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to bring it up. What are some of the you know, what do they call that when you the gifts or pledge, you know,
the pledge rewards?
Pledge rewards. Thank you.
Yeah. For starters, we have a basic $5 package, which gets you a digital copy of the book, as well as a copy of the FSU Insider, which contains a sneak peek at the origin, the 7-page origin story, and Lone Rider Frontier Galaxy, which is another book we're coming out with as one of our top three titles. Yeah. And that is based on a rancher in the 1940s and 50s when it was created. They were reading a story about a rancher, and he was taken over by a local crime boss that was trying to get the ore out from under his land, the resources. We've revamped that in the FSU as in the deep future and put it as an ore that is fueling time travel and put him on a planet called New Kansas. So, yeah.
Cool.
So we've gone with a sci-fi, a futuristic sci-fi steampunk fusion book. So the more poor people on the planet are going to be using a lot of makeshift steampunk style tools and equipment. And then you're going to have the wealthy, which get the fancier, shinier hi-fi stuff. So,
right.
But as far as these prizes go, well, rewards, since they're properly named, we're going to move on to the $8 range, which is the actual physical print. Mm-hmm. And you get all that other digital stuff as well with it. Then you move up to the 15 range, which has an uncut special promo card set that comes with it. You get three of those 7 cards that we have. We have Rusty Gilligan coming on as a special. Rusty Gilligan has been a professional in the industry since 1978, and he is doing some sketch cards for me as special rewards.
Cool.
Yeah. And we've got a couple of t-shirts in here. With the small logo, the large logo, and the Catman cover versions of those. If you get up into the higher end stuff, we actually are giving adaptations of people. We have you send us a picture, and we're going to make you into a character in the book. And it'll be a small cameo for an issue or a major cameo, depending on your pay grade, on the reward package you get. And also, we have a huge package with... I believe it was 7 of them left. It's a $14.75 pledge reward, but it's well worth it because what you end up getting is everything plus a premiere as a mainstream cast member in the Catman book that we're going to have you in at least 5 issues and a major staple in the book for a while.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I can't pledge that much.
Well, not a lot of people can, but there are a couple of people that I've talked to that have asked me to do that. So that with this relaunch, that was the reason we did that.
Right. So I just, you know, as I always say here on Superhero Speak, I put my money where my mouth is. I'm on here. You're on here to support your Kickstarter. We just did a $20 donation towards your Kickstarter. So, it's just launching tonight, so
yeah, it
got a little while to go.
Like 10 minutes before the show.
Yes. So, you know, by the time this goes up, we'll have 30 days left. And so you guys have a month. They're trying to reach $2,800 to make this happen. I think this is a great cause. Everyone listening, you know, definitely, if you can, jump on, donate some money. If you can't donate money, then spread the word, you know, just put it on your Twitter, put it on your Facebook, tell people about this, you know, it's a great project. And
please pay attention to the fact that Kickstarter is not to buy direct comics. It is to promote projects making it to the market.
Yes. Please. Yes. No, definitely. And again, if Brad, you're able to go ahead with your ideas and, you know, get this launched the way that it should be. I think it's a great thing for the industry, a great thing for the community of us comic book fans and readers that we need right now. You know, instead of just worrying about what are the main two doing, let's make it about the art again. Let's make it about the stories and the characters and make it what it should be.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. We're definitely trying to help the market and get it back out there to where people can enjoy comic books again, and also try to redirect the misconception that comics are for kids and geeks and, you know, mentally handicapped readers, that we're all contained in our own little genre of that handicap, being socially inept. You know, it's one of those things where everybody needs to read comics because they are a mainstream entertainment style, just like anything else.
Yes.
We've got to get back in there and understand that.
Oh, definitely. Yes. Mm. I always say, I always tell people that have kids like my age and, oh, I'm having trouble getting him to read. You know, it's like, put a comic book in his hand. Like, he doesn't need to go out and read War and Peace. Give him the latest adventures of Batman.
And just I misspoke because I didn't mean that as mentally handicapped, because I don't want to offend anybody.
My cousin's son
is that way, and I would never say that. You guys know what I mean, being sarcastic. I'm not trying to harm anybody.
Hey, that's something that when Stan Lee initially tried to present ideas for comics where the stories are more involved, the editors always came back and said, adults don't read this. It's just for kids. And he's like, no, adults read this. And they would come back, oh, well, if they're reading it, then they're slow. And it's like, well, no, it's not true. So
yeah,
definitely. Now I understood what you were getting at with that.
Yeah. Well, I just don't want anybody to take offense to it. And I apologize if anybody did, because these guys would never say that. And I would never intend it that way either. But what I'm saying by that is it's a certain mentality that you have to read comic books, is the common misconception.
Yeah.
And we need to get beyond that, because in the 40s and 50s, when all of these comic companies were out there and there were multiple choices, everybody read comic books, you know. Mm-hmm. My wife's grandmother, rest her soul, she had a big collection when she passed away, and she used to read romance and sci-fi comics from that time, you know, and that was the pastime, mm-hmm. because you didn't have a lot of television back then, and you had to, you know, everybody read back then, and they wanted something in that medium, and it was the perfect middle ground.
Yes. Yeah. And if anyone was offended by that statement, just send your complaints to Ben@superheroespeak.com. That's all I'm saying. If he's not here, he can get the complaints about the episode.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I apologize.
No, don't worry about it.
I did misspeak that, and I don't want to offend anybody, because I never would. That would break my heart if I hurt somebody's feelings like that.
Yes.
But yeah, as far as this stuff goes, you know, and for all the Big Bang fans out there that think, you know, Penny's right and thinks we're crazy, well, understand, you know, comics are a mainstream mature content, just like anything else. Your favorite movies, your favorite music, your favorite books, your favorite TV. Comics are something to get into that, and they're an affordable medium that we need to get back to as our grassroots, so that kids pay attention to it as well as adults, that it's another way to get back into reading.
Yes.
I mean, we're big on supporting all of that stuff. So, you know, support the Kickstarter if you can. If not, you know, like David said, spread the word and show us some love on that, because we are trying to give back to the community and build a bigger, better comic book industry.
Cool. So this is, you know, we're a little over an hour now. So, you know, I guess first off, is there anything you want to add at this point?
No, man. I mean, I think we, I think we pretty well pounded out everything on there.
Cool. So then where can people, find you? You know, your website, your Twitter, you know,
we have, Twitter is @FirestormComics. Mm-hmm. The main websites are comickickstarter.com, and you can find us on firestormcomics.com. On Facebook, you can find us at the Firestorm Comics / Firestorm Comics group and page, as well as Comic Kickstarter. So, you guys can find me directly at brad.linder.com. And you can also find me on Facebook at brad.linder.165.
Oh, okay, cool. There you go. Cool. So,
I think it's pretty much the rundown, man.
All right. So, John, you have anything else to add?
Nope. I've been very quiet this time around. But then, you know, it's just good to see another independent, you know, getting up and running and fostering a lot more competition in the market, because the more competition there is, the better stuff we'll wind up with to read.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We got to get out of the gate and get it running, man.
Exactly. John brings the episode home with the best point. Yay, John. I'm sorry. So we'll end it there.
Yeah.
And as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or, if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page, or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.
Superhero Speak promo, take one. Get your promo done.
So do you read comic books? Do you enjoy comic book movies? Well, then you should be listening to Superhero Speak.
What's that, Dave?
It is a weekly podcast where we talk about comic book movies, TV shows, cartoons, and all other things comic book related.
That sounds great. Who hosts it?
Well, I host it.
Oh, I'm out.
We also have Ben. You're one of the hosts.
Oh, you lost me.
Okay. Man. We also have John.
I'll do anything
for money.
Well, okay.
If John's there, I might show up every once in a while.
And occasionally we have Christopher Walken.
Yeah. Once in a while, when things are rough on the budget, I might step in and help out.
It's a good thing we have that padding in the budget to have him show up every once in a while.
He shows up for Oreos and orange juice. So I don't know.
Have you seen his IMDb page? He's needs the work, really.
The Headless Horseman was a hell of a role. Hell of a role.
If you want a podcast that feels like the conversations that you have in your local comic book shop, then you should check us out on superheroespeak.com, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Podcasters, I'm going to have you redo that entire promo. It wasn't working for me at all.
It was the plaid and the stripes, wasn't it?
Listen, you had an hour at Mood. I don't know what you did with your time.
Mostly slingshotting bow ties.
So, Mr. Gunn, what is your favorite comic book?
Personally, I like The Adventures of Superman because I love that costume. It's so skin tight and it's adequately designed.
Have you ever heard of the Ambiguously Gay Duo?
I have not.
I think you would enjoy them.
Oh, it sounds naughty. David, you rascal.
Oh my gosh.